And welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, we are having your proverbial little tiny, just a little tiny scramble. Yep. Everyone thought the other person had the guest's phone number.
Who's on first?
Yeah, we're having a little who's on first. You know, if we don't have any of that at the beginning, it isn't fun.
That's right.
Actually, it's not fun. It's not entertaining.
And otherwise, anybody could do it.
As a matter of fact.
That's right.
So, let's see. We have...
Sorry about that. That was my creaky joint.
Oh, sure.
That was the Halloween. No, that was the Halloween portion of the program. Hey, so I hope people caught last week's program. So what, today is the 20th last week. If I did my math properly, it would have been October the 13th. If you missed last week's show, I really do hope you go back and look. We joke around a lot. Kind of about serious topics, but the myth of Palestine and the two-state solution with former CIA officer Claire Lopez was really, really excellent. And
got
I think,
a lot of feedback on that.
Yeah, I was going to say, of all the different topics and things, every now and then something hits people at exactly the right time, and that program was one of those. We hear a lot about that, the whole two-state solution, and, well, they just need to have a ceasefire, and, well, we're all going to, you know, everybody's just going to learn to get along and all that. I think it'll be much more clear how far away that sort of thing, that type of solution is in our world. So that would be October 13th, 2024, and that program was with Claire Lopez. You can find it in our archives. They are free to listen to, free to share. It's MP3 files. You can download them. You can do whatever you want with them. And we do hope that you will share it. Okay. So we have Officer Joe with us this afternoon because we're going to speak with Hannah Palmer. And, well, for me, the fun part of Hannah Palmer is that my entire childhood growing up, it was all about "So help me, Hannah," when my dad was really mad.
You said.
He'd get right in your face and be like, "So help me, Hannah." And I remember I had to have been like a second grader because we moved away from that house. We were in Seattle. I'll never forget it. We were in the kitchen. And my dad, like, he bends over and he's like, "So help me, Hannah." And I looked at him and I thought, I got to know. And I said, "Who is Hannah?"
Pow!
I kind of got spanked a little bit. "Who is Hannah?" And I'm like, finally, I get to meet Hannah.
Well, Hannah...
Aaron, I don't know anybody named Hannah.
Well, Hannah is this incredible young woman who I had the opportunity and privilege of listening to about a month ago on one of Laura Stack's trainings. And I was immediately struck by her, and I said, "Who is this person, and how old is she?" And she is way younger than all of us.
What?
Yes, she is.
Are you
going
to do that after Bill's 50th high school reunion last night? Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say the number? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, come on.
and it's so appropriate to have her on because there are some recent statistics that are really interesting. Marijuana has now surpassed alcohol daily use in the United States.
Wow.
Okay, so it's not Bud Light anymore. It's
Bud Light.
It's Bud Heavy.
Well, it's Bud Pesticide, actually, if you listen to the rest of our shows. How do you feel about pesticides?
And other things that Hannah's going to comment on today is Measure 3 in Florida, where Luke Neferatos from SAM took on a total scumbag lawyer by the name of Morgan & Morgan, who's put over $100 million into the ballot measure, along with Trulieve, which is a marijuana corporation. And they are putting their finger on the scale of marijuana in that state, using California as the model. And so we know what's going to happen there. You're going to have marijuana being grown illegally in all the national forests. You're going to have marijuana being grown in the Everglades, and it's going to destroy that state. We'll see what DeSantis does. He's not a Newsom. We'll see how he fights back. I don't want to concentrate that. I want to concentrate on Hannah today. Hannah, are you out there?
Well, I decided to call this Just Say No 2.0 because we all grew up in our generation with Just Say No. And it worked for some, but we kind of mocked it a lot. And our parents all told us that marijuana was a gateway drug and bottom line is we knew a lot of kids over the years who might have smoked pot, and they weren't doing heroin. Nobody even, I don't know, where I grew up, nobody knew what any of that stuff really was. No one ever saw it. Real drugs, like what we considered real drugs. But now that is all in a very similar class, and it's no longer like this 2% THC thing that was happening when we were growing up. It's a very different animal now. But, yeah, and Hannah managed, we've spoken with people who have been through rehab and all that. I'll add that show to this because that really is the flip side. The folks who decided that the DARE program was actually meant drugs are really exciting, and so they took them all and then had to revamp their lives. There's that side, and then there's the Hannah side where she decided not a good idea. So I'll let her tell her story, but that's the vantage point of today.
I want to juxtapose Hannah's story today about a case I've been working on all week here in California called Emily Gold. And Emily Gold was a nationally recognized dancer, 17 years old, got a gummy from her boyfriend, had a reaction, walked to a bridge and jumped off the bridge, killing herself and then being run over by multiple vehicles.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
I'm working that case this week with a number of lawyers. We hope to take on the school, the boyfriend that gave her the gummy, the parents that the boyfriend took the gummy from, and potentially the county for not securing the bridge that had a prior suicide there. So it's that's the other side. And so 17 years old, snuffed out because of marijuana. And people say, oh, it's just marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
For young people today, it's potentially a one-time experience. So I'm going to let you talk to Anna and tell the community about
who
she
Hannah.
Is.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Hannah, are you there?
There we go. She was in the cone of silence.
Hannah, are you out? Hannah, are you out there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, my God. I can see that smile that I know is on your face and the light that's in your heart. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Out of the cone of silence.
Yeah.
So, Hannah, rather than read your bio, which I did post online for today, why don't you tell people a little bit about your background and how you kind of made these choices?
Yeah, of course. So I kind of became passionate about all of this growing up, just in high school and college. I was kind of, before high school, I was under the false impression that nobody was drinking or doing drugs in high school, and it was very naive of me to think, because, shocker, it is very common in schools. And realizing that, I started to develop a passion for living drug-free. And I kind of started to network when I was in high school, and I became pretty involved, not just in my high school, but with different organizations across the nation. And I worked for Every Brain Matters for quite a while, and I wrote some news articles for them. I did some of their social media, and then I got connected to the DEA, and I did an internship with them out in Washington, D.C. For my last semester of college. And then now I work in addiction recovery. I work at Northern Illinois Recovery Center in Illinois, Crystal Lake, Illinois. And I also am a certified Johnny's Ambassador Trainer and do some speaking for Laura and her amazing nonprofit.
So, Hannah, can we dig down in a little of that? Because, remember, you're speaking to listeners from all over the world, and they may not know who and what these organizations are. So could we go back to – let's go back to Aubrey and Every Brain Matters and explain what that is.
Okay, yeah, for sure. Aubrey, she started Every Brain Matters, and how did I find Aubrey? We got connected a while back when I was first getting involved in this, and I was fortunate enough to help her with Every Brain Matters, and she is very passionate about just spreading the truth about marijuana and the harms that she's seen and heard about. And I got to partner with her, and she has a website, and it kind of goes over everything, but she does a lot of outreach, and she is just trying to create a big network for just people from all over to share their experiences and get support on the issue.
Did she have personal tragedy in her life because of marijuana?
Yeah.
Do you know what that was, and could you tell us?
I don't want to speak on her behalf.
Yes. We've had her on the show, by the way.
Oh, you have? Yes. Okay. Okay, amazing. Yeah, no, it has been a while since we have talked about it, but I know that she has experienced it in her own family, and just kind of the hold that it had on her loved ones, and it just drove her further into preventing it from happening to other people. And, I mean, today, I don't work for Everybody Matters anymore, but today we still partner and connect and help each other on issues going on in our own communities.
And as I spoke to the Gold family this week, Emily Gold, and anybody that wants to know about that case can Google Emily Gold, Southern California dancer, and her case will come up. There's a lot of national news about it. And so she experienced what I know that Laura Stack and many of these parents, Bart Bright from Maranon, that they have experienced. And right now, the Golds are still going through the denial phase, like, how could this have happened? Where did we make a mistake? What did our daughter, 17-year-old daughter, who told us everything in life, how did we not know that this was happening? There was there's obviously been a long criminal case. It's not over yet. They've initially ruled it a suicide, but it's marijuana related, and we're going to see in the end that other people are going to have direct culpability, and I find that in a lot of parents that I talk to, they initially have denial, and then they go into, you know, it's the stages of grief. They go into anger, and right now the Gold family's in the anger phase. Emily killed herself on September 10th, so it's really fresh. And or she died. I'm going to say she died because it was, you know, she had a gummy and she had THC on board and quite a bit. So it's ruined this family completely. This family is destroyed. They will never be right again. And the people like Aubrey and the people like Laura Stack, they're more the exception in the rule than the rule of families that are able to come back from the death of a young person. And I know you understand that, you being younger yourself. And you're in your 20s, right?
Yeah, I'm 22.
22. So super interested. So then you work for Every Brain Matters. And then where did you go from there?
Yeah, well, I just want to make a comment off of your point really quick.
Sure, yeah, anything you want to say.
Yeah, so just talking about how marijuana ties into suicide, I have some friends and I know people that they were never suicidal in their life, but as soon as they started smoking weed, they became suicidal out of nowhere. And I just think that speaks volumes to the correlation that is there. And aside from that, too, you were talking about just families and parents, and that's another thing with marijuana is a lot of parents, they think it's just pot, and they're just used to something that's so different from how it is today, and just the, I guess there is a lack of education just because there's so much promotion for marijuana that people truly believe it's harmless, but when parents believe that, it's really hard for kids to believe something different, and I also see that a lot.
Well, the parents wouldn't intervene if they... Mm-hmm. What do you see now? Like, if we hid everything from our parents. I mean, they're... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess there were those kids whose parents were, like, their, quote, friends, but I didn't know any of them. Our parents were... But it was kind of easy to outwit them because they were so far out of touch with what was going on. Things had changed so much in like the 70s when I would have been in junior high and high school. They had changed a lot. So our folks didn't even know what was going on. Parents today, the landscape has changed a bit. But I think they're a little more aware. The bad part is this permissiveness that you bring up. Why... Do you think they just do it because they don't understand the change that's happened with the drug?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, I mean, not that parents advocate for their child to use any substance, but I think especially when it comes to marijuana, they are like, okay, thank God it's just marijuana, it's not another drug, when in reality, marijuana can do a lot more damage than they think.
Yeah. Well, they, and so, like in school, do they still have those, I realize you're you know, you've been out of like junior high, high school for a little bit here, but you're still way more current than any of us. Do they still do a lot of those programs? I know Officer Joe works on a lot of those here, but where you grew up, was that a thing? And do kids still kind of make fun of it? Or
yeah, so I think that's the biggest problem we face today, and that's another reason I became so passionate about this, because of the lack of education. This was a while back, but when I was still in high school, I wrote a report on the lack of education in schools, and I was just, it was unbelievable how little education we have going into schools about drug prevention. And the problem is, to start off, it was using scare tactics to scare someone out of using something. But if people use a drug and have a positive experience, they're going to discredit everything that they were taught. And I think we need to target drug prevention is talking about what's actually going on. Like, yes, you're going to experience maybe you're going to have a positive experience, but a lot of things are happening in your body that shouldn't be happening, especially when your brain is still developing.
That's a really good point. The scare, we have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, let's pick that up, because the scare you out of it. I mean, we find ourselves doing that on this show. I mean, if you went to hear about all the chemicals and all the stuff, I mean, you should be scared. So, okay, if that isn't something that works, I'd like to hear your perspective on maybe how that ought to be changed, since you work on it a lot. Our guest is Hannah Palmer. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but good. Body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them? I need a sign to let me know you're here, 'cause my TV set just keeps it on.
We're back. All right, Hannah. So the scare tactics, we were talking during the break here that they used to show us this driver's ed movie called Red Asphalt, and it's like, you get in a car and it's going to be, you know, and everybody just rolled their eyes and went out and drove too fast. Like, it didn't really help. So if you got to rewrite the
Well, what did Hannah go through? Did you go through Just Say No? Did you go through DARE? Did you see any of that in your school?
It does the same.
Yeah, I did go through DARE, I think, in fifth grade. And, I mean, I don't remember a lot about it. It did encourage me to not use the substances. But I definitely don't think it was as impactful as something else would have been, especially continuing education into high school and even more in middle school.
So at break, before we went to break, Aaron had a question, and we were talking about that. And Aaron, what was that question? Could you restate
I was curious, because I think in a lot of cases the tendency is to use fear as a motivator to prevent whatever it is we're doing, not just drugs, but anything. So you were saying that the fear prevention and the scare stuff really wasn't all that powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a difference between scaring someone out of doing things and kind of being a little too dramatic about it. Not necessarily making things up, but stretching things quite a bit.
Sure.
Whereas, like, facts that are just scary facts, I think we need to just focus on that. So what's actually happening in your brain when you use marijuana? What's actually happening in your body? You could, of course, incorporate stories like all the organizations that I listed. A lot of them have very powerful stories, and those I think are great as well. But we need to talk more about what is actually happening, because just again, like, people will try things and it will be positive for them, but they are not fully understanding the consequences that might come later on. Because when you use something, you're not going into it thinking that something bad's going to happen to you. That's why people use. They're like, okay, like, this would never happen to me. But the reality is it is happening to people, and it's happening to a lot of our kids, especially now, because of the high-potency marijuana that's being commercialized.
And does that make it more popular? Like, what's the pitch now with youth? Is like, oh yeah, I found something that's really, it's like a million times stronger than you found the other day. Is that a thing?
I think the biggest thing is people think it's harmless because of legalization. They don't understand the potency factor, whereas, like, these corporations are making it much more potent because that is going to make it more addictive. I don't think people fully understand that. It's more so, like, they're thinking it's a plant, it's safe because it's being legalized, people don't really care about this anymore, just let it go. I think that's more so the narrative, especially for kids. They think that is totally fine.
I've always been super bugged about the dope stores in our towns, because to my way of thinking, growing up as a little kid, you know, even as a little kid, you don't have stores for things that aren't legal, and you don't even understand the concept of legal as a little kid, other than, you know, stealing is bad, those kinds of things. Well, although
yeah.
In California,
if it's sold in a store, then
it's got to be fine.
It's got to be okay, or they wouldn't
and
be
so
allowed
they
to sell it.
Yeah, because it's been years now. Mm-hmm. So now kids are growing up watching this stuff. In you know, you can go, if you live near one, you drive by these stores that sell the stuff. Can you tell, like, how that is hitting people in your age bracket?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Even there's been many studies done that show that if there's billboards or there's advertising, or if there's a literal, like, pot shop in your neighborhood, that it just increases the likelihood that someone's going to use, because you're driving by it every day. It's becoming a little bit more normal to you. And your idea of how it might be harmful or impactful in a negative way to you, it kind of lowers, and you just seeing it and being around it more, you're like, okay, maybe this isn't as bad. It's all, I mean, it all comes down to money. That's why these marijuana companies are spending so much money on advertisement and billboards. Because they know what it's doing.
And Hannah, I've got a social media comment that's saying celebrities use it and even have their own labels, like John Belushi, and you got Cheech and Chong. And
do they really?
Yeah. Oh,
I guess that makes perfect sense.
Willie Nelson. You know, all these guys have their own marijuana companies.
Yeah, and they're successful. So,
including John Boehner, the speaker of the House,
down the dope trail immediately.
Yeah, and I have one just such a problem with that. It's a shame that people and with such a big voice are using it. To me, in a negative way, because that media influence is. Kids spend so much time on their phone, you know it's getting in their hands. But also, I think because celebrities are talking about this, people are like, oh, okay, they're successful, this isn't a big deal. But something I like to remind people is, just because they're maybe successful in their career, that doesn't mean they're successful in life. Like, if they're having to use a substance and promote a substance, they're trying to cover up something else that maybe they're not happy, or they have the family structure they want. I think it goes a lot deeper than just how much money they're making.
What an interesting counter. When I always get from the marijuana folks, they always try to tell me about famous people that are successful that use marijuana. They love to point to people like Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, and I just go like, yeah, okay. But you brought up what happens in the rest of their life, what's going on in the rest of their life, and
right.
We could take an hour and talk about that, but we won't.
Oh, yeah. And, like, even those are, again, those are just a few people. You have no idea how many people could be successful today that aren't because they got trapped in this this marijuana cycle and they're smoking and it affected their life in a negative way.
Well, I think we know that when you're high, you're not being productive. I always get people that try to tell me, "Oh, I'm more artistic. I'm better in bed and all these kind of things." But the evidence is the real evidence of that shows that that's all false. That's you know. BS.
There's a pretty timely article online this morning about seniors.
Yes.
Now increased use in, with seniors using marijuana and. They give a pretty good list of side effects to be watchful of, and it's the same exact thing we're talking about.
What's the list?
What's the list, Bill?
Psychosis.
Just a little psychosis, Grandma.
Yeah, it's all right, Grandma. increased anxiety, depression, anger. Balance issues. Old people.
Well, that's what old people need, more balance issues.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And delayed reaction times when driving. Increased risk of cardiovascular events. Interaction with other medications, because most people don't take other medications, so they don't have anything to worry about.
Old people hardly ever take any medications.
Yeah, yeah.
I never see them at the pharmacy.
But it's the numbers are kind of surprising. How many older people are now turning to marijuana, they say, for pain relief and anxiety and these sort of things. And it's they're getting the opposite. They could get the opposite effect.
400 medications now documented, standard medications in the industry that are used by people on a regular basis. 400 medications now are interactive with marijuana in a negative fashion, and that list is going up really fast.
Well, one of the biggies is blood thinners.
That's right.
A lot of old people are on blood thinners, and you start, taking marijuana, and you can have some serious side effects.
Well, they've led them to believe that it's all safe and
it's natural, Aaron.
You don't need a prescription now.
Right.
I mean, you can just go to your local shop and buy it over the counter.
Which that brings me to my next question for Hannah. Hannah, you're calling us. Your experience level in life is predominantly Wisconsin. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Could you tell us what's going on in Wisconsin with marijuana?
Yeah. Is it
legal? Is it recreational? Are people growing it? Are you having cartels move in, grow it? Do you see any of it in the community? Because you have beautiful, when I think of Wisconsin, I'm thinking cornfields and stuff like that.
Think of cheese. Stop yourself.
Cheese heads. I forgot.
I'm sorry. How is that not the very first thing on your list?
Okay. So what are you seeing? Do you have dispensaries on your blocks? Do you have marijuana advertising on your freeways?
Right
any of that
next
stuff?
To the cheese? God, that's so wrong.
Yeah. So in Wisconsin, marijuana is not legal. Thank God, but it is sold in other ways in gas stations because of the farm bill from 2018 in that loophole. So the
You're talking about THC derivative hemp products and things like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that is what is mainly sold. And there are, designated shops for that stuff in Wisconsin, and that's really blowing up. And it's Delta 8. But aside from that, we don't have recreational use from legal weed. Right across the border in Illinois, there is a legal market.
So you see cars like going across the border and then coming back with their windows down with the smoke blowing out of them?
Yep. I remember right when it got legalized, I knew people that were going literally day of across the border to get some weed.
And what do you think now? Are you still in college? No, you just graduated, correct?
Yeah, I just graduated. And I went to school in Illinois, and then, like I said, I spent a little time in D.C. too, where you smell marijuana on every corner you walk by.
And that's when you were working for DEA, went through the internship there?
Yep.
Okay. So what was it like in Illinois in college, as a college person today? Did marijuana ever come up into discussion to anybody? And did you go to parties on the weekends? And, was there any peer pressure to use it? Or is that pretty much gone since it's so available everywhere?
Oh, no, there's for sure peer pressure, and I think that's honestly where I see the most people use, because they're in a group setting, and they're like, okay, well, if we're going to go smoke together, we might as well just all do it together. Personally, I never felt the pressure. I didn't have a problem telling people that I was okay, especially after reading all the new just studies coming out about it. I did not want to do anything to mess with my brain. But I definitely saw people getting peer pressured into using it, and thankfully I went to a smaller college. It's called Olivet Nazarene University, but it is a pretty, it's a pretty strict school, so we are a dry campus, so at least, like, going to classes, it's not like the teachers were encouraging us to use any substances or anything like that. We would actually pray before classes. I definitely had a different college experience, but, I mean, you could find this stuff anywhere. I still had friends that were using in college, and I had quite a few actually come to me and say they quit after I talked to them about it for a little while, and it was cool to just see how they changed after they, gave up their dab pens and stuff like that, but... regardless where you are, even if it is a small private school, there's still going to be marijuana on your campus.
Where are they obtaining it from? Are they getting it from a dispensary and then giving it to friends? Because not everybody's going to go to a dispensary. I mean, you know, is it being resold by young people who go to a dispensary?
I think it's a bit of both. I think people get it from dispensaries, but there is still a black market for marijuana out there, and I know, like, I had some friends that a lot of the time they'd be like, okay, I'm going to go meet my dealer. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys, like, I would highly advise them just not to do that. They would be going to random parking lots and getting stuff. And they'd be like, no, I trust them. And you just can't.
I trust him. I trust my dealer. that just sounds absolutely asinine.
I know. And it's like, yeah, you just can't. And I feel like, we know after this fentanyl crisis that's been going on, and that was like a huge thing I heard all the time is when I was in D.C. I worked a lot on that and just the campaign of One Pill Can Kill, and a lot of times you would hear people seeing like, okay, I like trusted my dealer, I never thought this could happen, and then they got a pill of fentanyl in it. So it's scary that young people are trusting people that are selling them drugs, and I think that's a whole issue in itself, and I don't really know the answer to that, but honestly, I do think it's connection. I think we need to just connect more with people, especially after COVID being locked down. A lot of people still feel alone, so they turn to drugs to build community, but there's so many better ways to build community and human connection.
Wow. I want to do the DEA thing when we come back. We have to take another quick break, but definitely want to explore what you learned with DEA, because, you know, I mean, now Officer Joe probably dealt with the DEA. Some people may have had some experience with DEA, but most people, it's a three-letter agency that has something to do with drugs, and we don't know anything about it. So
right.
it'd be interesting to find out what you learned there. And I found a terrific song about the, I don't know, maybe it could be the drug dealers or the people who use it. Anyway, because you can turn your life into a zero, too, if you want to. You shouldn't, though. So we're speaking with Hannah Palmer. Oh, gosh, here comes this one. We're speaking with Hannah Palmer today, and you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Okay, hit it.
Go.
Say the truth will set you free. Hello, hello, let me tell you what it's like to be a zero, zero. Let me show you what it's like to always feel, feel. Like I'm empty and there's nothing really real, real. I'm looking for a way out. Hello, hello, let me tell you what it's like to be a zero, zero. Let me show you what it's like to never feel, feel. Like I'm good enough for anything that's real, real. I'm looking for a way. If I die young, bury me in satin, lay me down on a bed of roses, sink me in the river at dawn, send me away with the words of a love song. Uh-oh, uh-oh. Lord, make me a rainbow, I'll shine down on my mother, she'll know I'm safe with you when she's
the reality of all of this.
Yeah, the Emily Golds.
Uh-huh, the Emily Golds. So, Hannah, talk to us about your experience. Well, we had a question, actually, before we do that. I wrote down DEA, so we will do that.
So, Hannah, this is the question that came in, and we think it's a good question. How can adults help dissuade drug use in young people?
First off, if you have kids, talk to them about it. Be honest with them, share the facts, and I think that's number one, because the parents they have the biggest influence on their kids, especially when it comes to staying sober, and just encouraging them to get involved, do things, do sports, do clubs, do activities, do music, whatever their passion is, and just build a network of others that aren't using. And for marijuana specifically, recent data suggests that 1 out of 3 high school seniors have used marijuana, but that is a huge number, one that I don't love, but that still means that 2/3 have not used, and it's just reassurance that there's people out there that are not using, and that's where we really need to network and make that number bigger. And I think parents need to encourage that.
When you speak to your fellow peers, what do you say to them? And do you feel like you get through to, you know, a lot of them or some of them?
Yeah. So this is going to be for the rest of my life something that I'm trying to figure out. It is definitely hard, and I've gone through phases where I feel very confident talking to people. I'm fired up about it, and I want to help as many people as possible. But then I go through seasons as well where I am not as comfortable talking about it, because I just feel like the voices of the industry are so much louder than my own. And I think that's my biggest problem, just because people are believing everything that the marijuana industry is telling them. They believe all the empty promises, and when I come to them with just something that's completely different, talking to them that it's bad for them and what it's doing, sometimes I do think it rubs off, but other times I look at it more as planting that seed, hoping one day it will grow and they'll realize what it's doing to them and the loved ones around them. But I think the biggest thing is, one, planting that seed, but also just building relationships. And sometimes actions speak louder than words. So I clearly do not use. So I think when people around me, they don't want to use, and that's just a good starting point. And then building off of that, teaching them what you know, sharing your experiences, and then just hoping one day they'll see it for themselves.
The adults, the parents, because you have a lot of these. We've spoken about this many, many times on this program. The parents that are using marijuana in some form or fashion, and then, well, A, they're modeling that for their kids. Dumb idea. And they leave it laying around. The gummy bears and the stuff that looks like, especially the edible stuff, and it looks just, it's all mimicking children's, kids is cereal and candy and food. How does that all factor in?
That's tough. I hear stories like that a lot, and it breaks my heart. Even at the recovery center I work at, I listen to people's story and how they got started, and sometimes that is the case where it was something at home that was around, and that's how they started using. And it's just devastating, but I guess that's when we really need this education in schools, and we need these supportive communities. I think even more so now, like post-COVID, communities just are not as strong as they used to be, and I think when you have a strong community, that's kind of where you start to flourish, because you're supporting one another, and you're doing things together rather than going home, going on social media. We need connection, and we need the right information, especially in the schools.
With the packaging and the mimicking of candy and all that stuff, I mean, to our mindset, that seems like it seems like a big deal. Is it a big deal from your perspective, or is this just like old people being weird?
No, it's for sure a big deal. I think that, again, plays into why people think marijuana is harmless. Because even me, like, sometimes I question myself on the issue, because I look at, just say, Sour Patch Kids, and they have THC in them, and I'm like, how can that be harmful. It's just a game that the industry is playing because they're trying to hook young people. Because, I mean, that's what young people do. They eat candy. They look at that positively. So add THC to the mix. It's bringing in the younger generation.
You know, they went after the tobacco industry for targeting kids in their advertising.
Yeah, we couldn't have candy cigarettes anymore. Remember
exactly.
Those? We used to get them at Halloween.
Yep. Why do you think the marijuana or the they haven't caught up with the marijuana industry in targeting kids?
Why big tobacco hasn't caught up with the marijuana industry?
No, the government hasn't really caught up with it. I mean, they're allowing it.
Yeah, I honestly think it all comes down to money, unfortunately. There's so much money in marijuana that I think it's easy to buy people over, which is really sad. So I personally get super excited when I hear politicians speaking out about this because they take a lot of hate for that. Even looking on some people's posts or things that they say, and there's just so many hateful comments towards them, but I truly just applaud them because they are speaking the truth and it doesn't matter what those people say. So I appreciate when I hear those voices.
Yeah, I do think that the modeling, all these little bits, right? We have retail outlets, you know, flashing lights, you know, I mean, it's really aggressively marketed. The product is made to mimic food, made to mimic candy. So it's like, oh, this is and it's harmless. Candy's harmless. Well, it's full of sugar, and it's really not harmless. But
they have they have sodas now.
We're still in denial
about that. THC infused sodas.
They have THC
sodas.
Alcohol.
Yeah. So the alcohol industry's gotten into that, and the cigarette, because the cigarette industry is poised right now. As soon as the reclassification occurs, they're jumping in. They're ready to buy in completely into the marijuana market because they need the next generation. They need your generation. They need to addict you, and it's all about money. You were right.
But they're already all smoking cigarettes. It's weird. There's a huge resurgence of that. Again, we went through a long phase where cigarette smoking was bad. Now it's like big. It's almost like it doesn't matter. Everything is okay. It doesn't matter. You can just do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Which
I know. That's
crazy.
What's so sad. And people are advocating, I feel like, for mental health. There's been a huge push for mental health, but then they're also advocating for legalization of drugs and not just marijuana, but so many other things too. And it's just so contradicting.
Hannah, Aaron's going to do a PSA for us that I did for you for this show. Mm-hmm. And it's the real cost of marijuana in our communities and across America. But its focus is here on California. These are all confirmed cases and confirmed crimes, and it's going to blow your mind when you get to hear them. Let's run that PSA.
Marijuana brought to our communities. More of our citizens will be affected today by marijuana than any other drug. It has exceeded daily alcohol use in the United States. Human trafficking, water theft in the millions of gallons per day, electrical theft, property code violations, sex trafficking, child abuse, kidnapping, animal abuse, multiple murders, including cartel murders, arson or fires created by power theft, impersonation of peace officers or DEA agents during dope ripoffs, multiple armed robberies or burglaries of dispensaries and other grows, dangerous conditions for surrounding neighbors and farming livestock, hazardous damage to the environment, clear-cutting of forests, loss of wildlife, use of banned pesticides, honey oil lab explosions, heightened community fear, drugged driving, increased addiction, mental health welfare, hospitalizations from overdose by underage youth using edibles, homelessness and suicide, importation of illegal drugs and other guns through transnational cartel-controlled pipelines, supporting of felons on parole, supplying tainted marijuana into dispensaries and an unknowing public. None of this is good for our community. Let's be safe out there. Officer Joe.
Hey, wasn't making it legal supposed to eliminate all that? It's actually created a lot of that.
Yeah, go ahead and laugh, Hannah.
So Hannah, our statistics in California is that our dispensaries now are taking in somewhere between 60% and 80% illegal marijuana, and that's all untested, and I would say rarely are they being caught. There's all kinds of ways to get around it, and rarely are they being caught. What's your thoughts? Because those are crimes that are now occurred here in my local county and are occurring across America, and they're coming to you. When you get marijuana in your community, it's going to happen. You're going to get the Chinese. You're going to get the Hmong. You're going to get the Asians. You're going to get the Mexicans. You're going to get all these groups are going to come in that grow marijuana, and they're going to show up in your communities, and you're going to think that, hey, we had illegal aliens crossing the border. Yeah, they cross the border and they go directly to marijuana grows and start growing. And I've tracked them here in Shasta County. Get off the bus from San Diego and go right into the marijuana grows, and they're in the grows all season.
Yeah. No, I think it's crazy that people will hear that stuff and they're like, there's no way. And I think the coolest part of just my job experience, especially at DEA, was people just reassuring me that that's what they're seeing. So it made me feel like, okay, I'm not crazy, even though a lot of people in my community or my friends, they don't believe it, because the professionals, they're seeing it, and it just seems like the media is not picking up, which is so sad. So I appreciate you guys for what you do on this show. I think it's so important because we need to get that information out there. But yeah, that PSA, I honestly did not blow my mind, just because I feel like I've seen it in some other states, and I just wish other states would learn from the ones that have already legalized it and already seen those repercussions.
It's just an epic fail wherever it goes. Yeah. The idea that the crime goes away, that legalizing it makes everything better. The idea, we've done quite a few shows on pain. That's the one that makes me kind of mad, makes me really mad actually, is the pain thing. Oh, it's a good substitute for pain medication. But the medical industry, the honest medical industry, has actually discovered it makes it worse.
Right.
After you're done being stoned all the time, the pain actually increases. For those people who listen to that list, and especially like the animal abuse and stuff like that, I'm always like, you know, if you don't care if people die, you don't care about, you know, crime, you don't think there's really, you know, nobody's going to murder anybody I know, nobody's going to get trafficked that I know, it doesn't affect me, you might care. They're eating dogs, and that's happening an hour and 10 minutes from here, and I've seen it. The pictures on our website come from here. Right near us, and we're not unusual for a rural area that has been overwhelmed by illegal dope grows.
Well, not just that.
Go look at the pictures.
The pollution that these grows cause have killed all the wildlife in the area. You go up to these areas, and there's no more deer. There's no more.
They ate all those.
Well, there's no more bugs. There's nothing.
Yeah, there's nothing.
It's a little weird.
It's killed everything.
It's eerily silent. Yeah. But that you can find that at wethepeopleradio.us, and there's a tab on the top of the page called Pot. And on there, I have posted a ton of photos. You have aerial photos. You have up-close photos. You have slideshow. Go look. Go look, and then tell me that's not happening.
That's
crazy.
I hear you, and I see this too. I like when there's stories out there, or just horrible crimes or killings, and the only thing found in their toxicology report is marijuana. And I still, people don't want to believe that marijuana could be causing these things when it's just so obvious. But again, like you said, like some people don't want to believe it until it happens to them, and I just wish it didn't have to happen to more people for people to see it.
Well, that's always the deal, is it doesn't, but it doesn't affect me. There are so many people who think, well, it doesn't matter. But if all of this is leaching into your water table, these people are driving on the road, you just have a million different ways this can interact with your life. It doesn't have to be you have a kid in school. That's not the only way that this comes home and grabs you. Hannah, we have to take a five-minute break for the news, and then we're going to come back with you because you're our hostage for the second hour.
Yay.
Because, you know, there's so much more to say. All right, you can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us. Second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan. And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Hello, Bill.
Hello, Aaron.
I said it like the Silence of the Lambs. Hello, yeah. Bill.
Hello, Clarice.
And my name is Barack Obama.
No, it's got to be Clarice if it's Silence of the Lambs. Come on.
And today I am smoking marijuana.
Yes, there you go.
Aaron, can I say that we have probably the most good-looking engineer, young engineer that I have ever seen at this radio station.
That's freaking me out, but he has more hair than you do. Is that what we're talking about? And that's all we can see behind the screen.
It's just his hair blob. Okay. All right. My girlfriend said the same thing to me today, so I'm insulted.
There's some sort of hair envy going on. I'm not sure how that fits into the program.
Let's get back to
the DEA.
Yeah, let's get back to the DEA. So
did we skip last hour that we were going
to
do?
Well, Hannah, I want you to know that you and I are brothers and sisters in the DEA. I went through DEA training in
70-something. Come on, admit it.
I went through a 6-week school, and it was the best narcotics training I ever received in my life. So tell me about you as a young intern and what they had. You said you were working on the fentanyl issue, I think. But tell me how did you get there? How does a young person, you know, reach out to the DEA and say, "Hey, I want to come to Washington and do an intern.
Yeah,
I want to be a DEA." How did all that happen?
Yeah, so honestly, it started back in high school when I became extremely passionate about drug prevention, specifically marijuana prevention. I started networking, and then I heard about the DEA, and I really thought it was like the only big push to stop drugs in our country. So it kind of just, it came on my heart at an earlier age, and then it just grew. And when the time college came around, I was like, I need to figure out a way to get to the DEA. And I networked, and I know you guys are familiar with Smart Approaches to Marijuana. And Kevin Sabet, he is the CEO of Smart Approaches, and I connected with him, and he connected me with someone in DEA. And long story short, I connected with him, and then I ended up getting an internship at the headquarters in drug prevention education.
And what did they do? Yeah. What training did they give you? What parameters did they give you?
Yeah.
What actually happened when you actually, you know, you leave Wisconsin and you all of a sudden you go to Washington D.C. and you're in an apartment in South D.C. going like, oh my God, this is a ghetto.
No, it was totally different. It was such a cool experience, but totally different. I mean, Wisconsin, where I live specifically, it's very like community based, very safe. And when I went to D.C., it was like we had to lock two doors, lock the door to my apartment, like totally different. My packages were getting stolen. So just like the way of life is so different. But actually, my first day at my internship, it was so funny. I got an email saying it actually happens to be a CANTA event, which is a national drug prevention group. And DEA was supposed to be there. And they were like, Hannah, are you good to just like first week on started CADCA? And I was like, oh my gosh, no problem. So I started at this event, and it was pretty much a conference, but we had a booth there and kind of just to network with other people. So that was really awesome because right off the bat, I got to talk to other schools and organizations there. So my first week started a lot differently than normal. It was just jumping right in, which it ends up just being awesome. And I got to hear people from DEA speak there. and just learn more about DEA in general and what they were doing in the drug prevention space. It's definitely not as big. I mean, in our government, I feel like we definitely don't have enough drug prevention. So I'd love to see that grow, and I know it is growing in DEA. But, yeah, that was just my first week. And then off of that, I updated publications. I got to meet different families. There is Faces of Fentanyl wall at DEA headquarters, and people could submit photos of their loved ones that passed away from fentanyl, and sometimes they would come and visit that wall, so I got to meet some families that came in to see their loved one on the wall as a memorial. So that was, I mean, that's very touching, and that's very hard to see, but it was also just cool getting to hear their stories and being them for theirs, their grieving. So it was, I mean, there was just so many different things I did, and overall, it was just an awesome experience. I think the best part was talking to people and learning and hearing what they saw firsthand.
Did they give you the DEA t-shirt, that gold and blue t-shirt that DEA wears? That's what I want to know. Did you ever get a t-shirt for all your work with them?
Did you go there and get the t-shirt?
I did not get the t-shirt.
Oh my God, Anna.
I know. There's these super cool jackets, and I wanted one so bad. But unfortunately, because I was not an agent, I could not receive a jacket. But I got some little stuff, of course. The people I worked with were just amazing and so friendly, but no apparel.
It was funny. We had this neighbor, and his wife would only tell us he worked for the government, and he was gone all the time, and we were all on acreage, so it's not like we were right next door, but, you know, he'd come and go, and you'd see him infrequently, and it's like, well, what does he do anyway? Oh, yeah, he works for the government. It was always like, huh, I wonder what this guy does. So one day, he's out there mowing his grass, and he's driving around on his riding lawnmower, and starts raining a little bit, then all of a sudden he starts driving by again, and he's wearing an FBI jacket.
Incognito.
Everybody was like, huh, I guess we answered that question. So the jacket, you know, could come in handy later.
they're cool, but yeah,
hold out for that.
And then Hannah, what happened after that? So you've done your thing at DEA, and then did you make the decision like, you know, I'm not sure if I want to be an agent. This probably isn't going to be my career path, but I'm passionate about prevention. I'm going to move on. Did you go through that kind of, you know, Rubik's Cube in your mind?
Oh, 100%, and I'm still going through that. I loved my experience, but again, I am so passionate about marijuana prevention, especially because I think it's lacking in my generation, kids my age. I just don't see a lot of it. So I know that's my calling, and I know that's what I was made to do. So I'm definitely just on this journey trying to figure out the best way to do it. And I mean, I'm definitely still open to becoming a DEA agent. I have started that process, but long term, I know my heart's in marijuana prevention and just stopping what's going on right now in the nation.
Well, just out of curiosity, do you think that back into your high school time and into college, are the other drugs being, is the prevention message good enough on them, and really the whole marijuana part hasn't caught up, or can you throw it all in the same bag and say all drug prevention is still really lacking?
Yeah, I definitely think all drug prevention is still lacking. And, even with alcohol, too, you see, I feel like that's very common in high schools and in colleges, and working in recovery now, a lot of people, that's where they started, because that's just the culture. The culture is to party all the time and do things that are not healthy for your body. So I think it lacks in so many ways, and it's not even just a lack of education, but also we need, like, a societal shift. I feel like we have... we put on a pedestal wrong. A lot of people, like, that's what I mean. We hold partying and drinking and doing these things so much higher than what should be, which I see as like health and wellness and bettering each other while bettering ourselves. So I think there just needs to be a shift overall, having fun without using substances to do it.
Yeah, it always kind of cracks me up. You know, we're all hung up on no GMOs and gluten-free and all this stuff, and then they're all, eating marijuana food.
Right.
And you're like, huh. Like, makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Right. No, for sure.
But backing up on your life personally, Hannah, without divulging.
The only one she gets, you mean?
The only one she gets, that's right.
Personal?
Right.
Yeah. Sorry. Your personal life, the only one you get. So let's go back a couple of years. I know from talking to you that you found that your path through physical fitness was absolutely a factor in you not using drugs. Is that true?
Oh, for sure. Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Was it the coaches and teams that you worked with that made you feel that way? Did you feel, you know, that you were responsible to something greater than self?
Yeah, I think there's just so many factors in that. For one, like my parents, my grandparents, my family, they all were huge advocates of healthy lifestyles, and they were great role models for me. But yeah, aside from that, like, I was very fortunate with my teachers. In middle school specifically, I remember teachers, they were really good about having conversations with us. And even though we didn't have specific, like, education on this stuff, they were super encouraging about healthy lifestyles and stuff like that. So going forward, I think I just continued to dive into wellness and health. And I just knew that long term, that was going to have positive ramifications, rather than if I were to go down the path of drinking and experimenting in drugs, that I could end up somewhere I didn't want to be.
And then you moved from DEA on to another pursuit with another organization. Was there something in between, or what was the next organization you picked up with?
Yeah, so I after DEA, I had a little bit of schooling left. So I finished school a few months later, and during that time, I was a barista, so I went back to doing that for a little bit. And then big coffee drinker. And then after that, that's when I started working at the recovery center.
Okay, and so tell us about your life at the recovery center. What do you do, and what's the recovery center? What is it? What do they do?
Yeah, so it's called Northern Illinois Recovery Center, and we have inpatient. We have all levels of care. So starting from detox and inpatient, which is typically you're coming in and you're needing help to get off of something, and then you stay there for, you hear 30 days thrown around a lot, but we go further than that. And then we also offer an outpatient program, which is with optional housing, but not everyone does that, so you can just come yourself. But so it's a full continuum of care, and we have a substance abuse help, but also mental health help. So we kind of tie in the two. And my role within the company, it's actually a new role, and my sole purpose is to help people navigate treatment, make them feel comfortable. So it's a lot of one-on-one time with clients, I hear their stories a lot of the times. I try to connect with them and just make them feel comfortable throughout treatment, so they can get the most out of it. And then I run the alumni program, so after treatment I can call in and see how they're doing and try to plan events to just keep the sober community alive.
So you can start with this is all drugs, including alcohol?
Yes. Yep.
And you do you get are these self referrals?
Yeah, that's what I'm curious. Is it court
or is it court?
No, so it is self referrals. Mainly self and loved ones calling to get help for someone.
And are you funded by private monies or any public money in your program?
I don't believe so. I think it's mainly private. But I do know we have some grants. We offer some grants.
So is it fair to say that your clients that come in, and that's what we get to call them, right, clients? They don't get to call them drug users anymore. They're clients. So your
clients.
Right? So your clients are usually coming in with some kind of financial means to be able to pay for this, because it cannot be cheap.
Yeah, so we're technically called out-of-pocket, but we are very flexible, and we try to get people help right away because we don't want money to be a barrier. So we're very flexible, and We work with every situation a little bit differently.
Do you get family interventions that show up with somebody in handcuffs and say, okay, take them?
Got them duct taped in the back seat.
And are you a locked facility? Is there a locked facility?
So we definitely get a lot of everything. It's new every single day and what we see. But it is a completely voluntary program, so we're not going to hold anyone against their will.
Darn. Everybody wants that to happen. It's really interesting. Whenever this topic comes up, they're like, well, we just need to take them. And it's like, okay, stop yourself. We don't get to take them anywhere. That's not actually one of our choices anymore. We did that years ago. It didn't work out so well.
Especially that I'm learning after being there for a little bit longer is as much as the role I want to play on helping people be drug free, ultimately it's up to them. Mm-hmm. And you can only try so hard, but at the end of the day, it's their decision. So I think that kind of ties into just being voluntary, because you can't force anything on someone. All you can do is just try your best and plant those seeds.
So let me back you up on that.
Hold on one second. We have to take a really quick break, and then we'll let you back up.
Okay.
He's going to practice backing up on the break. He's going to be really good at it when we come back.
I'm doing my moonwalk right now. Michael Jackson's got nothing on me.
This is a good old people moonwalking in a radio studio.
whoa.
That'll be our show next week. Oh, my gosh. We're going to take a really quick break. Our guest is Hannah Palmer. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Into a
go, Hannah Palmer, the musical. There's your theme song right there.
Yeah. So
we've stalled long enough, Officer Joe. Yeah. What about all this backing up you're doing?
Well, I thought I did a good moonwalk. I really
He's
did.
Like, wait, what was I going to talk about?
My shoes got stuck to the floor, though, so I actually wasn't moving at all.
Like, I'll stall for time.
Okay, Hannah. So last week, I attended a local meeting here on fentanyl, and we had all the partners were there, and we were talking about what's the most effective way to use our money. And you, as a private organization, money, of course, is, you know, drives treatment. And what came out of that meeting was I was standing up going like, hey, hold on now. You know, yeah, fentanyl kills everybody, but marijuana is going to affect more of our kids in this community. You know, yeah, does somebody die of fentanyl? Did we have 52 deaths here locally last year? Yes, we did. I have a personal feeling about that, which I will tell. I personally think that if someone takes a pill and they want to meet Mr. Darwin, they just might. And I would rather focus on this generation that I want to prevent from destroying their lives. Because honestly, Hannah, it's going to be you that takes over this world. Aaron, myself, and Bill, we'll all be gone from this earth. And there'll be marijuana here for the next, you know, millennia. If we don't get a control on it in our country, it's just going to be the base drug that everybody's going to go to, and we're going to see a lot more drug. And there's all the studies now that show that, it's not a gateway drug. Absolutely, high potency is a gateway drug. Do you believe that? And is your research
100%.
Okay.
The number one predictor that teens that have used opioids in the past 30 days is whether they've used marijuana in their lifetime. So 100% a gateway drug.
What's the next step for you? Well, you've got one more organization that you worked for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tell us who that is and what they're all about.
Yeah, so Donnie's Ambassadors, and you've had Laura on the show before, I believe.
Yes.
But, yeah, she goes around and speaks to schools every week about the dangers of...
Hold on one second. We have a bad static going on.
Oh, shoot.
Is there a...
Sometimes the radio tower does that, but I can kind of modify it.
Oh, there we go. There we go. That's much better.
Yeah. Is it better?
Yeah, it's starting to get to the point where we couldn't hear you. Okay.
Oh, geez.
All right.
We're back, Hannah.
Back to Johnny's Ambassadors.
Yeah, Johnny's Ambassadors.
Yeah. Did you hear what I said before or no?
Yes. You went to work for Laura Stack and Johnny's Ambassadors. Could you tell us what that is first?
Yeah. No, for sure. So Johnny's Ambassadors, Laura started... because her son sadly passed away, and he used marijuana. He started using medical marijuana in Colorado, and, she saw the firsthand effects that it had on him, and he ended up dying by suicide.
Jumped off a four-story building.
Yeah, which, I mean, obviously devastating, and THC, again, the only thing in his system. So... because of all that, she started a nonprofit and she spreads awareness. She has a community online, which I think is just incredible because there's so many different people that join the community, people dealing with psychosis, schizophrenia, loved ones, people in the prevention space. Really, it entails everyone. And then she does advocacy work, talking to schools. And I've helped her on a few things and been able to talk to some schools on her behalf, which has been super cool.
And you're a Johnny's Ambassador, aren't you?
Yes.
And so,
yes.
So I am too, so people understand what that program is. Laura's foundation takes you through training on how to actually train adults and train mm-hmm. students on the dangers of marijuana. And she has put together really, I would say, a world-class program. Wouldn't you agree, Hannah? It's world-class.
Oh, my gosh. It's incredible.
Yep.
And her books. I would highly recommend her books. I had a parent. I was reading one in the hot tub the other day, and I had a parent saw me reading the cover. She saw the cover of the book, and she asked me about it because her son was using it and she had no idea what to do. She saw the side effects and she had no idea marijuana could do that. And I immediately was like, you need to read this book. It's so informative. It gives you a lot of statistics and data and then personal stories as well.
Hannah, her book, which you're going to tell me the title because I don't have it in front of me. I read it cover to cover 3 times, and then I made notes in the margins all the way through, and it was so impactful on me. I wrote a note in the beginning of it, a personal note, which I won't tell you about, to Laura, and then I Xeroxed it, and I sent it to her. And she said, holy moly, Officer Joe. And I said, yeah, I so feel for you and all the people that lose their lives to this drug and mm-hmm. how it affects their families. And it has affected their family extensively. And so Laura's dedicated her life to mm-hmm. making sure no other kids go through that. So you went through the program and you helped Laura. And mm-hmm. you're still a Johnny's Ambassadors today.
Yes, and just to mention the books, the first one's The Dangerous Truth About Today's Marijuana.
Yes.
And that's her story with all the stats. And then she released another one, which is just different families from all over the nation, and it's the impact of THC on our children, and it's different family stories.
And unfortunately, that's becoming all too common, isn't it, with the statistics of marijuana use. What are you going to do with your Johnny's Ambassadors training?
Yeah, I am excited to see where it takes me. I'm not sure. I've been trying to get into more schools. I just got to do one this week in Wisconsin, my home state, so that was really cool. But, I mean, anywhere I can go, I think knowledge is power, and I just want to keep learning more and sharing what I've learned. Especially, I mean, aside from statistics and facts, I think personal experience is also very powerful. I mean, Johnny is one example, and even in my own life, I've had a lot of friends that they had adverse effects from marijuana, and just seeing it play out in their own lives, it affects everyone differently, but especially just mentally, like draining your mental capacity, affecting your decision-making, your thinking, your memory, little things that it changes over a period of time, but people need to realize like that plays a big effect in your whole life.
Well, when you say you have, because we hear, you know, we've all heard, and that, oh, I had friends that were affected by this, and that, and that means something. When people hear that, if they have no frame of reference, give us some actual examples. Like, what have you, what have you seen in your travels? Because I don't think people really realize how bad this gets. It's like, oh, what did they do? Waste their time away. Like, people in our age bracket with the 2% THC, they're thinking, oh, the kids that I, you know, smoked pot with in high school all just hung out and were unproductive. Like, that, that was the greatest danger years ago, was that you were going to be unproductive.
I would love to talk on that. First off, I think in my mind the worst possible outcome is going to be psychosis and schizophrenia, and I have seen that. I've talked to families been affected by it, and see it play out in people that I know's lives. And it is, I mean, no, obviously nobody wants that to happen to them, and nobody thinks it will. But when it does, it's so scary because you're just not in your right state of mind. You're thinking things that aren't real, and that's one effect. But I mean, more common effects is going to be just increased anxiety. It, honestly, like, I've just seen marijuana, it becomes people's number one focus. Like, they need to go out and smoke, and it has such a pull on them. And it takes away from just their social life, their connection with people, because it becomes the number one thing they care about. And, just how it affects your brain, increasing anxiety, increasing depression, making your memory worse, your grades plummet, your motivation lower. There's just so many things. I can go on and on. As I said at the beginning, people, they start getting suicide ideation. I've seen that. I've seen friends come to me and they're smoking and they're feeling suicidal and they haven't felt that way before. But on the other side of things, I've also had friends out. They were going through this. They were smoking constantly. And a lot of the times, like, it would be peer pressure in group settings, but it would also be like they just felt good when they smoked. And that one friend that I was really close to in college, she was smoking a lot, and she finally stopped. And just like the improvement she saw, it was awesome that I was along for that ride, because I would talk to her about it all the time. And just getting off it, like, her mental clarity was there. Her lungs felt better. She was a better athlete. There's just so many pros to not using that I just wish more people would see.
What methods of consumption are most prevalent among youth now? Is it vape devices? Is it smoking green leaf? It's vape devices?
No, I think it's a mix. I know, like, smoking the leaf, I think that's really big. But the thing with vapes and dabs, it's easy to get away with, because it goes away. And it's just easy to use. So I think that's really big, especially in schools, because people will do that in the classroom, which is, I mean, I saw that in high school, and that's horrible in itself, because it's taken away from other people's education, and not even to get started on secondhand smoke. But, I think that and edibles, I honestly think everything being used, it kind of comes in waves, what's more popular at the time, but, people are grabbing whatever they can get their hands on.
What about some terms? Because terms, you know, I'm much older than you, Hannah, and we had these terms.
Much, much older.
Yeah, much older. And we had terms that were taught to us by the DEA back in my...
Yeah.
You know, and then all through my patrol career, we had terms. And just so you know, in my career, did I ever make arrests for major amounts of marijuana? Yes, but marijuana back then wasn't an issue like it is today. The issues in my police career were phencyclidine and cocaine, especially rock cocaine. That's what really hit my career really hard.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until I got right to the end of my career, when marijuana came in for medical marijuana in California back in 94, and then we legalized in 2014. And as soon as we legalized, it just exploded here, and law enforcement wasn't ready for it at all. And
just are. Hannah, I do, as an aside, you're given always an open invitation to come out here. We'll get a friend with an airplane, and I'll take you over the groves. And once seen can never be unseen. When you go over 10 miles of marijuana groves, thousands of them, you just go like, is this America? And we can't do anything about it. So let's go over some terms. Can you help me out?
Yeah.
Teach me.
Okay, sure. So, wait, do you want me to tell you terms?
Yeah. You tell me terms.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, do you want me to go over dabs and edibles?
Yeah, what is dab? I hear that, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, okay, no problem. So, dab, it's high-potency marijuana, and it's like a whack. And there's dab pens, and you can put dabs in the pen. And it's, I mean, I think of it as similar to vape. Where it, I don't know, that's just like how I see it. It kind of looks like one, but it's a little bit longer. And both of them just can evaporate in the air after you blow it.
Is that what they call a cart, C-A-R-T?
Yeah.
Okay, because a lot of people don't know that term.
So you light it on fire, you...
Does the dab have the same, does it have a smell like when you smoke it?
I think they're a little bit different, but I think dabs, the majority of them are not going to smell like a typical like joint or a joint would.
Yeah.
So that smell, Hannah, is the smell from terpenes, pinene, limonene, and about, I don't know, there's probably 10 terpenes in marijuana that people smell. And and obviously they market and make marijuana in different and today with all the synthesized marijuana they add all kinds of adulterants including things that make it smell one way or the other. So okay, so we've got this thing called dabs. What else? What other terms? And we know about carts now. What else?
Yeah. So dabs, carts.
How about street names?
Street names. I mean, honestly, I feel like I don't really hear street names. It's usually people are just like, we're going to go smoke or we're going to take an edible. I feel like people are pretty straightforward with it, unless they're using like a lot of times like people will text about it and use emojis, so like the puff emoji, stuff like that. But I feel like for the most part, people are they're talking about it and they're open about it because they don't think it's a big deal.
And accessing it, they're using social media to access it with each other.
Yeah.
And then
online
purchases?
Especially Snapchat, because your caps can go away. So, I mean, most of the people that I know that have gotten it online, it's through Snapchat.
That's good for parents to know. In the case of Emily, the parents did not know. And once their phone was released by the coroner, the parents found out the level... What was going on in their daughter's life with drug use and, you know, a video of her lighting up a dab. So because you're a good person, you don't know the street names. So I'm not going to go over those today.
We're going at this from somebody who actually was never a drug addict.
Right.
Good idea. What a great idea. Just out of curiosity, what is more... I guess maybe this is hard to quantify. In your experience, since it's all you get, what are you seeing? Are people more into the whole edible thing, or is it still just regular hanging out with their friends smoking pot?
I think it's both. I think there is a big pressure for people to smoke together because it's the cool thing to do or it's a way to bond with your friend. Mm. But also just I know people that will just take an edible for fun or they think it helps them sleep. Or a lot of times they'll take one and something really bad will happen because it's a high dose and they just have noise. They think it's going to be good for them, but then they have an adverse reaction to it. And I've seen, for some reason this summer, personally, like four accounts of it where I'm just with someone and for some reason they take an edible and they go into shock almost. It looks like they're having a stroke.
Yeah, we learned about...
That sounds like fun.
What is it? Couch paralysis or couch hornea? Paralysis. What's it called?
Couch paralysis.
No, it had a name.
Oh, I know.
I remember that a long time ago. It was... They become basically paralyzed on the...
Catatonic, almost.
Yeah.
So, Hannah, there's this thing called hyperemesis. Could you tell us what you know about it? And have you ever seen it in your life or had any of your friends discuss it with you?
Yeah, I actually was just reading that a study came out that over 2 million people suffer from it. I don't know if you guys saw that. I think it came out like yesterday or 2 days ago. But to give the listeners just an idea of what it is CHS, it's pretty much like a reaction your body has from smoking weed, and it's nonstop throwing up. Also, like, scromiting is a term used when you're scream vomiting. And it's accompanied by severe stomach pain. A lot of people become severely dehydrated from that, and it has resulted in death before. But I've seen people come in before.
Hold it, marijuana. Hold it. Are you saying that somebody died as a result of marijuana? Because marijuana doesn't kill people, isn't that correct?
Right.
Well, it also doesn't cause scream vomiting, right?
I was so shocked when that number came out. And even there's a Facebook group out with people talking about it, and it has, I want to say, like 30,000 people in this support group for others, like everyone suffering from cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome.
And there's no treatment for that other than hot showers, and occasionally they'll give antipsychotic drugs. Is that true?
Yeah, and I mean, what's so interesting is that people also say it doesn't cause addiction, but you see people suffering from this, and they know they have to quit smoking to heal from it, but they can't stop smoking because they are addicted. And it's just like this horrible cycle.
Wow, that sounds like something I want to learn about. Definitely worth trying and see if maybe you are one of the lucky winners. Wow, every time we do a show on this, I'm like, really? And this is becoming really popular. We have to take a really quick break. I have a couple of very nice songs we're going to hear. Let's take a different tack. We'll just go for the nice side, and then we'll finish up with Hannah Palmer, our guest today on We the People. You can find this program later, commercial free, free to listen to, free to share at wethepeopleradio.us.
For a giant with just a sling and a stone, surrounded by the sound of a thousand warriors shaking in their armor, wishing they'd have had the strength to stand. But the giant's calling out my name, and he laughs at me, reminding me of all the times I tried before and failed. Giant keeps on telling me time and time again, boy, you'll never win. You'll never win. But the voice of truth tells me a different story. The voice of truth says do not be afraid. And the voice of truth says this is for my glory.
We've played that song every now and then over the years, and I can't think of anybody it fits better than you. This is
I love it.
Yeah, that is really what you bring to this, because there are a lot of people who have seen addiction, come back from it, been impacted by it, come back from it, overcome, and all those. And those are all really important, and those are super important stories to tell. But for you to make a decision early as a young person to fight something that is this big a scourge on our society, and make the level of commitment that you have is, I mean, thank you for doing that, because there are not enough of you.
Yeah, well, thank you. That means so much, because it definitely has been a journey, and being such a voice to drug prevention and marijuana prevention is definitely not easy. People, it's not the cool thing to do. People don't love hearing what you have to say all the time, but I think it's worth it. And at the end of the day, I see it as the right thing to do, and I feel more like myself when I'm talking about this, because it's something I am really passionate about, and I can see it making a big difference in the future.
Well, you have the ability to make an impact that none of us can. We can share a lot of information, and that's that's hopefully we're like it's kind of a throwback thing. But you know, you can be Gladys Knight, we'll be the Pips. You know, like we're the better backup singers.
She probably doesn't know who Gladys Knight is.
I know, that's what's so fun about it. All the old people will even get the joke. But I mean, we can be the backup, but we're not credible with your age group. Not really.
Yeah. And even, I mean, I think you guys still, you do amazing work, and everyone has some sort of, like, you can touch so many lives regardless of age and stuff, but even people discredit me because the fact that I've stayed sober and I've never used marijuana. People say, you'll have no idea, but I mean, personally, I don't think you need to try something to already know it's bad. Like, I've read the side effects. I've read what's happened to other people. I see the growing concern. I think that's enough for people not to use. So I just try to get that word out there.
Well, that's something that's always been kind of a pet peeve of mine is so many people are held up on pedestals because they used and they were addicted and they overcame and they've seen the light and done good things, and God bless them, they're healthy now, but there's not enough people that are held up because they didn't do it. They they didn't.
Amen.
They said no, and I think they need a lot more recognition.
Well, I'm curious, Hannah, and I was thinking about this earlier when you were talking about the recovery center. So many of the people who are part of recovery centers, you know, work in them and all that, they are people who previously had experience with drug use. And I kind of thought that was a bit of a, I don't know, like rite of passage. Like, you can't work at a drug treatment place if you if you weren't a drug addicted person. So how does that work?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, that's very true. It has been tough at some points because I am not in recovery, so... And a lot of people are, but at the end of the day, I do think it is good for me to be there because of how I am and how I live my life, that I can connect with people and they could look to me saying, like, okay, she's sober, she's got it down, how can we learn from each other? And I heard this a while ago, but first seek to understand if you wish to be understood. So I always hear people out and try to see where they're coming from. And then I just hope they hear me out and can, it will help them go further and onto the next parts of their life.
Yeah, I do. I think it's really important. Of the people that you have encountered in like all the sort of recovery sites, so the people that are, I guess on, not the people that are using drugs or trying to get off them, but the people that are in prevention, how many of them are former, are personally former drug users? Is that most or hardly any? Or
I definitely think it's a mix. I think first off, you have some sort of experience, and that's why you're involved, whether it's your own use, whether it's a loved one's use, or maybe you just heard about stuff and you're like, wow, this is a big issue. I think it's a mix for sure. But we can use all the people we can get in drug prevention.
Absolutely. I just was kind of curious because it seems like in our time doing programs and things about this, almost everyone was personally impacted in some way, either themselves, family members, something.
Mm-hmm.
You've kind of covered this from a very different route.
It's hard. It's hard. Like I said at the beginning, like some people discredit me because I've never used, but I think it, I still think it's very powerful just because I chose not to. And you, I mean, you've always heard that saying, you are who you hang out with. And I think if you surround yourself with people that are healthy and they're drug free and they're trying to grow and trying to be better, that you can turn your life around. So I try to find people like that, and I try to be that person to other people.
I think that's really great. And you're so I'm curious, do you come from a big family, a little family?
Yeah, I come from like a medium sized family. I think it's just me and my sister.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, but I'm the only one that's super passionate about this in my family, but they're all supportive 100%, which is really awesome to have.
That's cool. I was curious. Yeah. I'm like, she's an only child. I've been like guessing, right?
Yeah, no, I got a sister, but she's amazing.
I like that. Yeah. Well, I got that sister, but she's amazing. They get more amazing as you get older. They're not always so amazing when you're a little kid.
Yeah, for sure. We still have problems sharing clothes, but we'll get past that one day.
That's funny. Well, I think that's cool. So did we skip any?
Well,
I know we skipped tons of stuff, but no, we're in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, so I just want to acknowledge how appreciative I am that there are Hannahs in the world, and I hope that there's 100,000 Hannahs out there. And Hannah, for me, to you personally, and to all the listeners, I think you're a very special person, and I am so appreciative that I had the ability to get trained by you and to know you, and I hope this is the beginning of a long-term relationship between us, and you'll be on my marijuana mailing list from now on, so prepare to get your inbox. Oh.
Incoming!
Prepare to get...
I'm just excited that after 63 years, I got to find out who Hannah is.
Oh my gosh, no, thank you so much for your time, because that truly means so much. Honestly, I've struggled a lot with feeling alone in this, and I don't know, it can be hard growing up in high school and you feel like you're the only one drug-free, only one making that choice. So hearing people say, like, they feel lucky that there's me out there, it really does mean a lot.
Well, and with that comes the responsibility, Hannah, and there is a responsibility. You know, every day I get up and I go, today's the day I'm not going to talk about marijuana, and that lasts for about maybe 10 minutes, and then my inbox gets full, and people are calling me, and my wife's saying, can you go outside to handle that conversation, please? And, you know, because a lot of the conversations I have are with victims, and it's depressing if you just talk to victims all the time, and so for me also being it, you know, seeing what the grows are doing in my community and trying to stop that and trying to get politicians to come along, with so many politicians taking money from the industry now, that's super difficult.
Yeah, as people are voting, we should throw that out there, because we are we're ahead of a big election. It's really time to take a look at where people are taking money, and what are they supporting. This is a big, big deal, because the policies they set, that's how you wind up with the dope stores in your town that are marketing to children, back to the beginning of the show. That's all. That's not being done by you. I mean, that's being done by people we've elected.
That's a huge part of all of this, and I think that also ties back to drug prevention. We need political leaders that are going to advocate for drug prevention and for stopping marijuana to become big in our own communities.
Hannah 2.0, what's going to be on Hannah's list in a year? And then where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Well, she can't say, because otherwise she's working. She can't just tell him, hey, I'm going to blow you off in 6 months. For God's sake, Hannah, don't answer that. That's a terrible question.
No, it's okay.
You're going to stab your employer in the back, Hannah.
Yeah, don't share this one with your employer. That's okay.
No, it's okay. It's okay. They know I'm very passionate about marijuana prevention, and they support me because they see it too. And I mean, long term, I don't know where I'm going to be, and I question it on a daily basis, but I just try to connect with as many people as possible and see where I can best utilize my passion and my skills, and yeah, so I guess we'll see, but I hope it's somewhere preventing people to falling victim to the marijuana industry.
The Hannah Palmer Foundation.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
I don't know if I'd want to make it that much about me, though. I don't think I'd want to use my name.
Oh, it's too late now. Way too late. But, you know, just FYI, if you go look up Hannah Palmer, because I was going to pull your picture off LinkedIn. I saw you had a profile on there, and I put Hannah Palmer LinkedIn and did a search. You know, you're very busy. You have a lot of alter egos. There are a lot of people named Hannah Palmer doing some really cool stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so you can hide right out in the open. I think you'll be all right.
Okay. Perfect.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm curious if you had to do an elevator speech for a parent who thinks that their teenage kid using marijuana in some form or fashion is no big deal. What would you tell them in, like, you know, 20 seconds before we say goodbye?
Yeah, no, I would say that is something that they need to take very seriously. Today's marijuana is so much different to what they might think it is, and the consequences are a lot worse than you might think it is. So I would highly encourage them to go out, look up some of the stuff, find other parents that had kids that were using, and see what happened.
I have crippling depression.
What?
Yeah. Well, that was weird.
Where did that come from?
Your average marijuana user.
Okay. We have to jump off. Hannah, thank you so much. We look forward to speaking with you again in the future, and you can catch all of this on the archive at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
No, thank you guys so much. It was awesome.
Thanks, Hannah. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. No, we can't slow down, we can't hold back, though you know we wish we could. Oh no, there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.